are now recording, and this is Out Now with Aaron and Abe. I am Aaron, and as always, this is...
Abe! Aaron, you look very three-dimensional right now.
That's one way of putting it, for sure. Okay. Because, yeah, we're in the same location together.
For another special Out Now in the car.
I think our specials are we're next to each other. like there are podcasts that have like offices and desks where they sit right across from each other all the time, and we're like, ours is special because we're doing that.
Well, you know, first of all, we're hipsters, and we were remote before it was cool to be remote. So.
Exactly. Although it does surprise some people that we're not in the same place.
Yeah.
It speaks to our tremendous chemistry,
and also to the quality of our microphones. I think
that's
be like, hey, they sound like they're in the same booth, right?
Yeah. How are you doing?
I am doing well. Thank you for asking. A little tired, but at the same time, doing great.
Good. Well, I'm doing well. I'm happy to see you.
Yeah.
Happy to be here in person, doing a show with you.
Do you want to explain where we are?
Do I?
We're outside of a movie theater.
Yeah, exactly. We've just come from a movie. The movie we're going to talk about.
That's right.
And we're now recording from outside that location. We're basically trespassing. That's really what.
Yeah, we paid for snacks and the tickets.
That's fair.
So we're patrons.
Okay. Well, Out Now is a film podcast.
Oh, right.
We're able to discuss new movies weekly. And yeah, that's what we do. I don't need to go through all the intro. I don't have all the stuff in front of me. That's what.
This is. Every now and again we do this week.
But this is episode 594.
Hey, we're almost a palindrome.
We're almost in a numerical palindrome, correct. And this week we're talking Never Let Go.
Mm-hmm.
The latest from director Alexandra Aja, starring Halle Berry. And, yeah, that's what we're going to do. We're going to talk about that movie.
I was like, yeah, I guess the other kids are pretty small.
Those are the facts.
This is true, Jack.
And, yeah, we're going to do all of that. First, let's get some show notes in here.
Okay.
It's the middle-ish of September, which means October is right around the corner.
Okay.
Which means that we're going to have our special bonus horror-themed episodes coming. Which is something fun that we always do. We'll have a commentary. We'll have four other episodes that are all dedicated to horror in some capacity. And stay tuned. You'll hear all about those in the coming weeks. But we've got some cool ideas. So Chiwetel Ejiofor said, be prepared.
He hasn't said it yet.
He said it in that movie that made a billion and a half dollars.
Okay, okay.
He's not back.
That's true. Good point. Yeah. And also, it's an origin story.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he wouldn't say
so
that.
So if Jarell Jerome, who's voicing young Scar, also says it, will be like, he got that from his older self.
Yeah.
That's how it works.
A Biff Tannen situation.
It's a real Biff Tannen situation. Exactly. He gave him the Lion Almanac and told him that.
The Lion Almanac.
Yeah, the Detroit Lions. Yeah. The key phrase.
Told them to bet on the Detroit Lions. Told them,
yeah, that's all of that is true.
How do you know this old man?
It's great that we hold these shows way more seriously when we're together in the car. All right. What else? Other show notes. Ed Wood commentary track. We just released that. Super fun. Super informative, I think. Yeah. I think we had a lot of good info in that one. Brandon Peters, Scott Mendelson, and I, we talked all about Ed Wood for this month's commentary track. So check that out if you haven't already. And if you did, I hope you liked it. And if you did like it, you know what you can do. You can go into iTunes. You can search for our show. Out Now there, and maybe you can give us a rating and review, which would be great.
Thank you so much in advance. Or give us like some stars on Spotify.
Stars, all that. We just got some. We got one recently, which is really nice to see.
It's really cool.
Great to have that lead into a lot more.
Yeah.
What else? Let's see. We're talking about Never Let Go.
Yes.
There's no official plan yet, but we'll see how this episode turns out. If there might be another special guest on to talk about another movie that came out
this
week.
That's true. Yeah, good point.
We'll see where things go with that, but for the time being, we're going to talk about this.
It might be a twofer, is what you're saying.
It might be a twofer.
Yeah, okay.
I don't want to make too many promises before we actually record said other part of said twofer, but we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
Regardless, let's get some meta cookies.
Trademark.
Each one that we will be able to talk about the cookies.
Trademark.
That was fun.
That was great.
What's going on? What have you seen recently?
You know what I started watching?
What?
The last season of Miracle Workers.
The Mad Max season?
Slash, like, you know, Cyborg. I got to the middle of the season where they're doing the Ace Ventura play. And I was like, this is art. Honestly. I was like, this is exactly the level of goofiness and also the level of fun that these actors aspire to. And you know what? When she was doing Ace Ventura on the stage in the Thunderdome, it was beautiful. It was beautiful to watch. I have to go finish the rest of the series, but I'm digging. You and I have dug Miracle Workers from the jump, but I'm glad that I'm finally catching up. But I'm also kind of sad because there's no more Miracle Workers after this. So it's a bummer.
It's a good show.
Yeah.
And the fact that it went on as long as it did, I'm impressed by.
I also agree with that because I don't know actually who watched it. But I'm glad that I got four seasons and four full seasons, according to the number that they had there. Now, the other thing I've watched is what's back is Bob's Burgers. And you know what? It's fine. Like, I don't think the episode that I watched of the new season was ultra good. But, you know, it takes some time. Around the Christmas holiday season, they tend to, like, they will drop one or two episodes per season that are very moving or very incredibly well done, and maybe they're just saving it up. So yeah, just a lot of TV catch up,
or maybe people just like it more than you do. I don't know.
That's true. Good call. Also, you know, I also watched Speak No Evil, but you and I talked about it for like 40 minutes.
Yeah, we had
over the phone.
We had a conversation we definitely should have recorded.
Cause I was like, wait a minute, I'm talking about TV, but I watch movies too, and it's because we already talked about it. I'm so spent talking about it.
Well, what, you weren't here on the show last week. What did you, to briefly sum up, what did you think about Seek No Evil?
It was fine. I think that I liked it maybe a little bit better than you did, and I think that there were a lot of differences from the European version and this one, and what you and I discussed and what I was talking to you about was some of the European sensibilities that kind of add to the horrificness. In large part, the American one, less sad and bleak than the European one. Because the way that the European one ends, the Scandinavian or Danish one ends, whoa, like, I'm just like, this is, I feel bad. The American one, like, you and I talked about it, a lot of tropes in the third act. And a lot of like cat and mouse kind of chase. So it was fine. But beyond that, I'd probably say like, check it out at like a dollar theater, or, check it out on premium stream. So yeah, that's me.
Yeah. All right.
Oh, thanks for the support.
I mean, you can say like, probably like, I think it's a bad movie. So yeah, you like it more than I do. That's clear.
I get why some people would like it.
Oh, yeah, I get why people would like it.
Yeah.
They're just wrong.
That's what you said on the show.
Yeah, because I'm right. I've seen a few things this week. I saw a film about a woman living in a slightly dystopian world where there's random things of evil coming after her, and she has to kind of avoid it so she can survive in this terrible place. It's called Asriel. Okay. Very similar to the movie we just watched.
I was like, are you kind of jokingly describing the movie we just watched?
I am, okay. Because, yeah, I saw a movie that's very similar. Yeah. It features Samara Weaving
in
another role where she just enjoys getting covered in blood, I guess. She seems to be something she tends to do.
Okay.
This is from director E.L. Katz. E.L. Katz is a filmmaker who made like dark comedic thrillers such as Cheap Thrills, a film I quite like. I watched this movie not knowing anything about it, beyond the fact that it was directed by E.L. Katz, and I was very surprised, and it was nothing like any of his films that I've seen before, so I was not prepared for what this movie had to offer, which basically felt like watching Last of Us Part 2 DLC spin-off content.
Interesting.
That's what it felt like as far as woman in the woods, seemingly infected type people running around, and also humans that are evil coming after her.
Again, you're not describing the movie we just saw.
And I'm not. Like, it is, it's only loosely similar, and the fact that they're coming out very close to each other is a coincidence.
Yeah. This is like Armageddon and, what was the one with Elijah Wood?
Deep Impact.
Yeah. It's one of those situations.
Got
it.
This movie, or Asriel, which will be on Shudder soon, it's like in theaters next week.
Okay.
It's fine overall. Like, it's short. It's like under 90 minutes, so it keeps up its tension well enough. It's just not offering a whole lot that's necessarily new, but it certainly has a vibe to it as far as seeing kind of survival horror stuff play out. And Samara Weaving's quite good. She has to be mute the entire role, which is also, never easy, I'd imagine. No. It certainly seems like a challenging role to kind of be put through.
Yeah. Are others speaking, or everybody's like pretty
quiet? The idea is that the world they're in, Most people are mute. There's almost no dialogue.
Got it. Okay.
The only time there's dialogue is for reasons.
Mm-hmm.
But it's very specific. It's like the idea is that the rapture has happened. That's why this dystopia exists.
So there's just clothing everywhere on the ground.
They're in the woods, so we're not in areas where there would have been like heavily populated people.
Got it. Yeah. Okay. Good way to save our production.
That's a good way to save our production. For sure. I thought it was fine. Like it's one that you can certainly watch on Shudder.
Sure.
I also watch, I believe the embargo will be up by the time this goes up, Salem's Lot.
Really?
Yeah. The movie made quite a while ago at this point that got shuffled around, was eventually moved out of the theatrical schedule, and now is going to premiere on Max in October.
Yeah.
It stars Lewis Pullman, Bill Camp, among others.
Good cast so far.
It's got a good character cast. It's directed by Gary Delverman, who made the third Annabelle film, and I believe he's the writer on the It movies.
Wow.
And there's been a lot of speculation as to why is Warner Brothers not releasing this movie? What's going on here? Since it has a lot of credits and things that seem to be working in its favor.
I'm on the edge of my seat.
So I'll say this. I have no connection to Salem's Lot. I didn't read the book. I never saw the Toby Hooper miniseries.
No, his name's Toby Hooper.
Or the Rob Lowe miniseries.
Uh-huh.
So I have no wherewithal of what Salem's Lot is beyond it's about vampires.
Okay.
So watching this movie, the biggest takeaway I had was it very much feels like it's been truncated down from a much larger story that has better characters and more explanation or at least detail about what's going on exactly.
This feels like these things happen to all Stephen King movie and novel.
Not always all of them, but ones like this where there's semblance of a better film here and that's just not what we're getting. I can see why it's been dumped to Max. It just doesn't overall, I think, work.
Okay.
I do think it can be quite stylish at times. It makes some directorial choices where it's there's some visual panache going on here. Okay. There's some uses of silhouette and canted angles and things where it's like, it's not just like a stock directed movie. It has some effort being made to be let's make this look a little stylized.
Okay.
Good
poster.
It's got some cool moves. I didn't hate this movie by any means. It's just kind of it kind of sags in the middle. And again, it feels like there's stretches where if I was watching a fully fleshed out version of this, I'd probably be into what the story is more. But as it stands, just very familiar as far as there's certain character types that I get.
Sure.
There's vampires that do things because they're vampires and so on and so forth.
Yeah. Are they cool vampires like Colin Farrell? Drinking Budweiser.
When you say cool, you mean cool looking or cool? Their attitude's pretty fun.
Yeah,
hang out with this guy. In
He's
normal
like, hey, I know that you're underage, but you want a beer? Of mine.
I mean, the way you're asking it, I'm kind of actually, yeah, they're kind of cool. There is this kind of you want to join us, right? You should join us.
Well, yeah, that's Lost Boys style.
I mean, that's kind of what it's doing. They are kind of very inviting vampires. It just seems like they're also, not very. Doesn't seem like that's the path you really want to take.
Yeah, I was like, it seems like it's a pretty high price to join their club.
Just to be clear, I've said a statement that it's probably not good to be a vampire.
Why would you say
aware.
Something so controversial yet so brave?
Just a real hot take there.
Yeah, just
probably
so close
not good
to Halloween
be a vampire.
Too, Aaron.
Yeah, I can see why it's going to Max. I don't think it's a waste of time, but I do have reservations about what it's doing.
Got it.
That said, I am more curious to be let me finally watch the Toby Hooper version, because I know that one people have a lot of praise for.
Okay.
That's Salem's Lot. I also watched this other thing that I'm definitely going to tell you about right now. I watched Uglies.
Which one is this one?
That's the Louis Mendes talked about this last week on the show. Okay. It's the McG directed YA dystopian.
That's why you guys are talking
film,
about McG. Okay.
Starring Joey King.
Oh, this one. Okay.
It's bad. it feels like it's 10 years too late.
Is it a movie or a series?
It's a movie.
Okay.
It's based on a YA book series.
It looks like it.
It looks exactly like it. And it feels like I just said, it feels like it's come out 10 years too late.
Yeah.
Why are we still doing this? The even trying to describe what, like, the premise of this one is bonkers to me, because it's like a future society where there's people that I guess are just ugly and they have to aspire to be, to like be joining a world where they can get all the plastic surgeries they want so they can become not ugly.
Oh my gosh. Okay, keep going. This sounds just like a terrible adaptation of what they clearly missed the entire point of for Brave New World.
Telling me to keep going means that I have to, like, understand more of what this was.
Well, I was saying, it's not good, so you don't, like, you would not recommend it.
No, it's bad. It really let me down from Mick G.
Famously, you don't hate him as much as other people do.
Is that famous?
Kind
of. And one of the things that I like from Mick G?
You liked the Sword and the Shield movie with, what's his face?
The what movie?
The last night of the round table in the world of the thing there with the diver guy from Fast and the Furious. I can't remember his name.
What?
Never mind. Keep going. Oh no, that's not him. In the Name of the King?
In the Name of the King, that's like an Uwe Boll film.
Yes, yeah, okay. I'm mistaking Mick G and Uwe.
All right.
Keep going.
I watched The Outrun.
This sounds very familiar.
It's with Saoirse Ronan.
Ah,
it's been
okay.
A lot of festivals.
Yes. Yeah.
It's coming out soon enough.
Don't tell me too much. I want to see this.
I won't tell you too much. I'll just say that Saoirse Ronan's quite good in it.
Yep.
I mean, she's Irish, but it's a very Scottish film. So it takes place in the Scottish Isles.
Okay.
And it's a well done drama.
Okay.
Here's the interesting thing, though. So I had the screening for it at the Dolby screening room.
Okay.
Not the Dolby theater. The Dolby screening room, which is basically, you know, a room set up so it has fancy Dolby set up and everything. Okay. And I was curious as to, like, I mean, I'm not against having a screening in any place, let alone the Dolby screening room. It's like, why would they show this movie, a, like, sobering drama about Saoirse Ronan dealing with things?
Yeah.
And then when I watched it, I'm like, oh, I get it. It
Whoa.
Makes good use of sound for when you see this movie, you'll know why. You'll know what I'm referring to.
Okay.
There's some very compelling sound design that takes place towards the climax and just throughout the film. But there's some choices it makes where I'm like, oh, that's actually cool that I got to see it in this specific location.
Yeah.
It doesn't make the movie, like, supremely better or worse, but it is like, oh, okay, this actually justifies the use of this room for this specific movie.
Okay.
Which I appreciated.
All right, well, I'm going to go check it out in Dolby, though.
An overall good movie. I mean, it's well acted, for sure. She's she's very good in it.
Yeah. She's been getting some buzz, probably some awards claim, and that might, if that's true, then great. You know, she's been nominated since she was, like, 12.
Yeah, you can get her fourth Oscar nomination.
When will she win?
Fourth is me being conservative. She might already have four.
It might be five.
I'm pretty sure she has three.
Yeah, I know that she has. Yeah, I think that she's got
Let's think of it. Let's see. She has Atonement, Brooklyn, Little Women.
That's three.
Is there one more in there? Like, what would it be for? Like,
Hannah.
if we had our way.
Exactly. If we had our way, we'd talk about her in, like, the fourth episode we ever recorded.
I want to say three. I'm very confident with three.
I'm looking at as you keep going.
You scroll too far.
I know. keep going.
Okay.
Oh, shit. There are four.
There's four. Okay, hold on. I got to think about this.
Yeah,
hold on. Okay, so there's...
Oh, I should have known.
So there's two leading. Are there three leading?
I can't give you any clues.
Okay, fine. Okay, so...
Because then you'd get it immediately.
Okay, so Atonement,
yes.
Little Women.
Yes.
Brooklyn.
Yes. What is a movie that you and I both love?
Both love?
Takes place not far from here.
Oh, of course, Lady Bird.
Lady Bird.
Yeah, there we go.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
We're not in Sacramento, but we are in Northern California.
She has four nominations.
That's incredible.
That's a lot. It's more than me.
Oh, right. I'm looking at Aaron as if I have five nominations myself. Like, what a loser this guy is.
Okay, so this will be your fifth nomination, presumably.
Possibly. Something. Yeah, we'll see.
All right. The last thing I'll mention, Wolves.
Okay. Yeah.
Wolves with George Clooney and Brad Pitt. I have to say Wolves because it's not Wolves.
It's not Wolves.
It's Wolves.
Yeah, there's no V
there.
Because
they're lone wolves, but they've been brought together in these circumstances. This is a film featuring these two guys as fixers. Essentially, Amy Ryan has had some kind of accident. There's a young man in her hotel room, and so she calls on whoever she calls on to bring in a fixer.
Right.
George Clooney arrives. He's like, okay, I'm going to fix this problem for you. then Brad Pitt shows up and is like, actually, someone called me as well. So this is these two guys that generally work alone, and now they have to reluctantly kind of work together to deal with this whole situation.
Yeah.
The movie's directed by John Watts, who's made all of the Spider-Man movies.
With Tom Holland. Yeah.
Before that, he directed Cop Car. This is his first movie in like a decade that's not Spider-Man.
Okay.
And it's produced by Clooney and Pitt and Soderbergh and Grant Heslov, all those guys.
Yep.
I think the movie's fine. It's works as like a... I had a good two for... Now I'm trying to think of what... Because one is After Hours. It's like all one long night. But After Hours, by way of blank movie that I can't remember right now.
Yeah, yeah.
Except not as good. It's... The thing that you want from Clooney and Pitt is their chemistry, because obviously they work very well together.
Yeah, we've seen in the Ocean's movies.
They know how. But
they've also been in other movies that Clooney has directed as well, but small bit parts.
The issue here is because these guys play these loner characters who are trying to hold onto that persona. Their chemistry, it's denying you what their natural chemistry is.
I see, because they're so frosty with each other as characters.
So it's not as fun to watch them together, despite the movie trying to be a kind of, I don't want to say dark comedy, because it's never, too serious, but it's certainly, it's a low-key comedy.
Got it.
And somewhat low energy, which is also kind of the issue.
Is it a long movie?
It's an hour 40.
Okay.
48 That's with credits. Bad. It's fine, and I think there's not much it's really accomplishing. It's giving you this New York world that these guys exist in that's weirdly underpopulated for being mostly at night and in New York.
Yeah.
But that's besides the point. And, it's amusing at times. And they're in the middle of it, there's this, really fun, chase sequence that takes place.
I think I've seen parts of it in the trailer.
You see parts
perhaps,
of the trailer, yeah. But it's a pretty long chase and pretty well made.
Yeah.
But, overall, there's not a lot there. And you kind of, you're kind of waiting for more to arrive from this because it has the potential to do a lot with what it has working for it.
Yeah.
But it just never quite gets there. So, I don't dislike this movie, but I do think it kind of... It's missing a certain something extra to make it more of, a fun romp.
Yeah. In the writing, or there's no action in the, or there's not a beat, in the directing?
I would say the writing, I guess. Okay. The direction's fine.
Sounds to me is it missing a Soderbergh?
I'll say this, yes. If it was in the hands of Soderbergh, I think we'd be able to make up for whatever the script's lacking just by nature of how other cool directors would handle this material.
Yeah.
John Watts, God bless him for doing all he did with all that Spider-Man money he's made, but I don't walk out of those Spider-Man movies thinking, well, that's clearly a John Watts picture. So doing this, I'm like, it's nice that he did something that's not that, but he's not showing me much that suggests this is the guy. Yeah.
Okay, MCU directors, who's more interesting, John Watts after the MCU stuff or the Russos? Which one would you much rather watch a movie from first?
Well, I'd say John Watts, just because at least Wolfs isn't aggressively doing something that I don't prefer.
Uh-huh.
And also, I'm not seeing John Watts in interviews being you know what, Netflix, the best. Theatrical movie is dying. You know what, I hate art.
Touche. All right.
By nature of that, John Watts hasn't made a cherry.
Yet.
Yes. And if we're talking,
well, he can't make it now because they took his leading guy.
And if we're talking just straight up audience friendly feature, yes, I like Wolfs more than I like The Gray Man.
100%. Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, like I said, it's fine. And, it's not, despite them not having that classic Ocean's chemistry.
Sure.
At Pitt and Clooney, they're still Pitt and Clooney. They still know how to bring the stuff that they can bring to a film.
I mean, these are two of the most recognizable actors, and quite honestly, I think that they still fall in that class of movie star, right? You enjoy seeing them on the screen.
Yeah. And I know, because this was going to get, a wide theatrical release, then Apple got pretty...
Cold feet?
Well, after having multiple movies this year that just frankly didn't do very well in theaters, they backed off from theatrical. Between Fly Me to the Moon and Argyle, having a feature film,
yeah,
going to theaters once again and not necessarily knowing if they can prove that they can make that last, I mean, that's unfortunate, and I don't necessarily think that that's the best strategy they could have chosen.
Right.
But here we are.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's Wolves.
Okay.
Let's move on to trailer talk. Sorry, that's enough, quickies.
Trademark.
Let's move on. Now let's move on to trailer talk. We're talking about one of the newest movie trailers of the week, what has come out, what we thought of it, what have you. And this week, we have a brand new trailer. That's right.
Yeah.
Den of Thieves 2, colon, Pantera.
Is there a colon?
Of course there's a colon.
Okay, I don't know. I thought that there wasn't one.
That's just a big run-on. If it's just Den of Thieves 2, Pantera.
I thought it was just like Den of Thieves 2, and then like, not even like a subtitle. It was just like, oh, by the way, Pantera. You're well, right. There's a colon.
There's
right.
a colon.
Okay. Because look at the poster. There's like Pantera down the bottom. There's no colon.
Well,
there.
You're not going to put colons on the poster.
Yeah, it's aesthetically unpleasing.
Yeah, exactly.
All right.
This is, of course, a sequel to Den of Thieves, a film that definitely exists and definitely has fans. It's coming 7 years later for a film that didn't do well in theaters to begin with, but certainly has something of a cult following.
Mm-hmm.
Abe, did you see Den of Thieves?
Of course I watched Den of Thieves, man.
Okay.
Of course I watched Den of Thieves.
So are you based on what you're seeing here, and, you know, obviously the riveting way that the first one ended, are you excited for Den of Thieves 2, colon, Pandera?
The riveting way it ended was a hilariously bad British accent from Ice Cube's son.
I don't recall that at all.
Really? Because he's just like, hey, bruv, you want to drink at my bar? And that's not what I call the bar.
None of that I remember.
No.
I know he went to England. I don't recall him specifically using an English accent.
But he's got a terrible English accent. And I'm just like, what is happening here? Why is it about this guy? I watched Den of Thieves. It's not my favorite, you know, cops and robbers type of movie, especially like with this grittier attitude, because this is like around the time like things like Triple Nine were coming out with Casey Affleck, and there was like a lot of like actors that were being cops then tough cops kind of thing. I think what kind of makes the original one work is Pablo Schreiber, and that is something that we're missing in this one, because if you watch the first one, something happens to him. And it's unfortunate, but, you know, what you do want to get is an interesting story, and I don't know if I'm interested in this story. Like, Gerard Butler's character, we know what happens to him in the first one with regard to his home life. And then in this
one, you remember this movie a lot better than I do. Like,
yeah,
you're saying we know what happened to his home life. Like, I don't know what happened. Like,
he's like a bad husband, bad dad kind of thing. You know,
I mean, I could just guess that, but yeah, okay, sure.
Yeah. So there's nothing very interesting about his character that makes me feel compelled as a movie goer to be like, you know, I want to learn more about Gerard Butler's character. Like, how is he fucking up his life this time? It's like, why? You know, like, it also doesn't work if you have the concept of like a heist film in which I'm maybe rooting for the bad guys. It makes me feel weird. So
that's every heist film, though.
Yeah, but there's some cool, like, we just talked about the cool guys over at Ocean's 11.
But you're picking and choosing which ones you choose to support.
Fine. It looks okay. I'm kind of interested, but kind of really not. How are you feeling about it?
I mean, I'm not going to pretend that Den of Thieves is a movie I like very much.
You clearly didn't remember any of the details that I was telling you.
Like, people, like, the cult following that it has amassed, which it has.
Yes, it does.
And that's basically why there's a sequel, because it does have a following.
Yeah.
But they get mad at the idea of people calling it dumb heat, but it is dumb heat. I mean, that's the movie. Like, it's what's watching dumb meathead heat. I get that it has ideas for what it's going for, as far as where heat shines for the many reasons it shines. But like, one of the ways it shines is the way it balances watching career criminals and watching career officers, career detectives.
Mm-hmm.
What Den of Thieves is at its best, what it's doing is it's showing how fine of a line it is between these specific characters, where you have Pablo Schreiber and 50 Cent and their crew, mm-hmm. and you have Gerard Butler and his crew, and he is walking the line of innocence. Like,
Gerard Butler.
Yeah, like, yeah. He may have a badge, and his goal is to stop crime to some degree,
right.
But it is dealing with the criminality of cops. That is interesting. And if you're going to make a follow-up to that movie, the hook here is that he's quit being a police officer. He got fired.
Sure.
But he's no longer an officer. Now he's like, I'm tired of riding this line. I'm just going to go straight up bad.
Right.
Now, the obvious twist would be he's been undercover the whole time.
Yeah.
Now,
Donnie Brasco.
Now, I think the movie's going to be smarter than that if we surmise that from a trailer.
No way.
I think it can be.
Okay. All right.
So that's my hope.
Okay.
In the realm of how interested I am in seeing a Den of Thieves 2.
Yeah.
One of my biggest issues with Den of Thieves is the fact that Gerard Butler is so big in that movie.
Like, his personality or physically?
Yeah, he'd take eight magic beans and he's 9 feet taller than... No, yes, his personality. He's super big in that movie.
He is pretty large in that movie, too. He's got dad gut now.
He's playing it so big.
Yeah.
So, like... More of that isn't exactly like, well, finally, that's what I need. Like, that there's less other character actors and more Gerard Butler.
Yeah.
But, I mean, they made it. Like, so I feel like that there's a win for, like, a fan base that I'm actually, like, excited for them more for them than I am for watching the movie.
Sure.
And, I mean, like, for all the meatheadedness of the story, when it wants to be like a straight action movie, it works well. I do think like the stuff it's doing in Den of Thieves, shootout stuff.
The intro is like very
this intro that you apparently remember because I don't know how that movie begins.
It's
I assume there's some kind of shootout.
Yeah, exactly. It's one of the best sequence bits in the
movie. The main thing I remember is there's two things I remember from Den of Thieves. One is 50 Cent giving his daughter's date a rough time before prom by taking him into a room full of all of his criminal friends, which is pretty hilarious.
And then they all laugh after.
It's a great sequence. Yeah. And then the end, which is a giant heat type shootout on a freeway, and there's all these cars around everything.
Yeah,
like that stuff is assembled quite well. So like, if they're
missing out on all these cool details, if they're gonna do the other stuff,
I can't say I'm excited to rewatch Den of Thieves in anticipation of Den of Thieves 2, but at least I'll know what the fuck I'm talking about when I do. So, like, if they're going to make more Den of Thieves, like, okay. Like, the first one was assembled well enough, or at least on an action front, I'm not going to be surprised if it's handled well. It's the same director, so we'll see what happens. And honestly, I do like O'Shea Jackson Jr. I do like him on screen.
Yeah.
Him as criminal mastermind in full-on mode this time around, as opposed to, like, hiding it. Spoilers for Den of Thieves.
Yeah, I was gonna be like, that was like a really weak plot twist, and I didn't like that part. But they tried to be smart about it in a few other places too for original Den of Thieves.
Well, now that the cards are on the table for him, maybe that'll play better for his character this time around. Yeah. So we'll see what happens.
All right,
Den of Thieves 2 arrives.
Really, really looking forward to it. Got it.
Den of Thieves 2. It arrives in theaters. When does it arrive in theaters? You know? You got it?
Yeah, January 10th.
January 10th, so right at the top of the year.
There you go. We're going to come back from the holidays, brand new year. Let's go see Den of Thieves 2.
I got to get here quick.
Yeah. You're going to fly home from your family's gatherings?
What a 2 weeks. Den of Thieves, then the Wolfman? Oh, man.
Shit. You want now? Let's go.
All right. What? That's true. Let's move on. Let's get to our main review for Never Let Go.
Life's been hard on you, boy, since the world ended. But remember, one touch without a rope on is all it takes. Remind the house what we deserve is protection.
Blessed house of ancient wood. Shelter to the pure and good.
And good. We'll keep you bright and never wrong. Heaven is here. Within our home.
Okay, that should have been some of the trailer for Never Let Go. I'm going to read the IMDb plot synopsis since we're recording remotely. A family that has been haunted by an evil spirit for years, their safety and their surroundings come into question when one of the children questions if the evil is real.
Sure.
Not the best way to someone that wrote that. I don't feel like
that's... You should have played the joke of, let me just redo the Asriel plot and then say it for this movie.
There we go. Alright, so this movie stars Halle Berry, as mentioned. It also features Percy Daggs IV and Anthony Bay Jenkins as her two children. There's also a dog in there, real name Brass.
I know.
So we've established.
Didn't like that. Should have just called him Brass.
It's from director Alexandre Aja, who's previously given us such films as Piranha 3D, The Hills Have Eyes remake, and High Tension, a film that people like that I don't. Also, Crawl, which rocks.
Yeah, that's true. And they're making a Crawl, too.
Still crawling.
Okay.
Abe.
Yes.
We've just gotten out of this movie.
We have.
Never Let Go.
Yeah.
What did you think?
You know, it's not the strongest movie. And I think it starts off with an interesting-ish premise. Interesting enough premise, I should say. But as it further gets along here, I think there are some problems with not just the storytelling, not because it's super convoluted, but actually because the actors are weak. And I know that they're just children, they're just boys, but when you have them in here trying to, you know, go up against Halle Berry, who is an Academy Award-winning actress, and then they kind of take over the rest of the movie about halfway through, it's very difficult to kind of get that level of actorial buy-in from an audience member. As far as the movie goes, not very... we would have seen other elements of this played out in other movies. This is obviously a biblical tale, one in which, like, two brothers, Cain and Abel, their mother, this is their Garden of Eden. There's an evil lurking outside, which is... possibly the snake that is makes its appearance in all places. There's a lot of allegorical elements here from the Bible, these stories from the Bible, and the way that it plays out is just okay. Like, even though there might be some other elements of I never wanted my children to be a part of society because society is also evil, if you extrapolate it to that level, or if you were to go even too further of I had alcoholism, where I am sick, and therefore I did bad things, and I never want that to happen to my children because I have harmed or I am harmed, and I don't want this to pass on. Like, there's a lot of things that you could pull from this, from metaphors, and it's fine the way that it is, but it's not very intriguing, even in the visuals that it's trying to present, or the evil that you're trying to kind of maybe understand. And there's backlashes for the mother that I don't think are fully fleshed out. There's some really cool set pieces, but they don't really do anything with it. I dig the setting of the movie in this cabin in the woods, literally, that is very remote and isolated. But, yeah, unfortunately, it doesn't really do anything for me. And I was kind of bored with some of the later items, mostly just because I was kind of taken up by the acting. How about you?
I will say I've had a mixed response with Alexander Aja as a filmmaker,
okay,
where I think some of his films are just too mean without having purpose behind said meanness.
Okay.
I think of, like, his Hill Has Eyes remake.
Yeah.
I think of High Tension. In other films, I feel like he knows what kind of fun to have, because I really like Crawl, and I think Piranha 3D knows what it's trying to be.
Yeah.
He didn't do 3DD, and that's a whole different story.
We talked about that one.
That movie's awful. So, you know, coming into another one of his films, him combining with Barry, who I do think has had a lot of good efforts going on when, as far as her, like, thriller mode goes, whether
okay,
it's
yeah.
The Call
right.
or Kidnap, like, I think she seems to know what kind of script she wants when it comes to doing these kinds of stories.
Yeah.
So watching this film, granted, we're just getting out of the theater, so, like, I'm still in, like, hot take mode.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think it's effective enough. I like the kids more than you did, apparently, because
yeah.
I didn't find them to be a problem for me.
Mm-hmm.
I can say there's story contrivances or what have you that come with this sort of territory.
Yeah.
And which usually allows me to think, well, if you're going to base that around children, well, at least children be children, so I'm not going to be too upset about them making stupid decisions
because
kids make stupid decisions.
Yeah.
Obviously, yes, the allegorical aspect of it is very apparent, but what I like is how much... I like how much it's choosing not to fill in exactly.
Yeah.
I think by keeping things somewhat ambiguous as far as what exactly Barry's past is...
Mm-hmm.
How far the threat they face really goes.
Sure.
Like, it kind of hints at answers, but it doesn't give you exact ones. I think there's enough there that had me compelled as far as what the main overarching idea of this story was supposed to be.
Okay.
I can agree that it gets slower in certain sections in a way where I want the tension to ramp up and not go down. And so, like, in terms of sustaining itself for a certain period of time, it does feel like we get into a few too many lulls.
Yeah, I feel that.
Which, you know, that's unfortunate.
Yeah, because I know exactly the part that you're talking about, and I felt the same way.
Yeah.
At a certain point, my brain was like, oh, it's picking up. It's going to pick up.
And I do feel, for a movie that is rated R, I don't think it necessarily holds itself back from doing more, but I do think there are opportunities it could take if you really wanted to ramp up that tension.
Yep.
Or if you really wanted to, like, dig in more. And it makes me wonder if they're, because of how lightly R I think it is, especially for an Alexandre Aja movie who knows how to go hard if he wants to.
Yeah, yeah.
I do wonder if there's a version of this that they're trying to get PG-13 and it just didn't go that way. Because I feel like there's, you could edit out a couple of shots and you're PG-13.
Yeah, I hear that. I did like those visuals, though, that were compelling.
Yeah, and that makes me think, like, well, let's do more of that, then.
Yeah,
like, I feel like it should, like, there's some creature effect type stuff in this movie.
Yeah.
And I thought it was rather effective. I liked the choices it was making as far as how to visualize evil.
In many manifestations, like, other forms.
Yes, yeah, very cool. A variety of forms. I'm more curious now if, like, if they kept that going, would that, like, make, if they had the R from the, I have no idea, so that's the thing. I'm only speculating about the rating, but sure. I do feel like it feels like a pretty tame R to the point where I had to check to make sure, because, like,
when you said it, I was like, are you sure?
Because and watching it, especially when you have a film involving children, because when you get horror movies of kids, you're making certain choices as far as how to do things.
Yeah.
And this one does feel kind of tame. So I was like, if it maximized some of the stuff more, would that make it better? I don't know.
Yeah.
If it made whatever other cuts necessary to get it to that PG-13, I don't think that makes it better necessarily either.
Sure.
It is what it is. The movie's the movie. I can't judge anything more than that.
Right.
But it does feel like there's opportunities it could have taken if it wanted to get harder with the content, if it wanted to, like, delve into how evil works more.
Yeah.
And that kind of stuff is like, yeah, okay, we can, how much do we want to terrify an audience? And that makes me wonder now, because it so clearly has this allegorical aspect to it, like, is it trying to attract a certain audience? Because a film like, Kidnap, for example, there is an element of that where I can see it attracting an audience, the way it's designed, the way Halle Berry, like, she prays a few times in that movie to cut to a, to wish that she can be able to find her son.
Yeah.
And that's a PG-13 film. I wonder if there's a similar thing going on here as far as how she wants to get audiences to see this movie, not just standard audiences, but one that might be more inclined to see something because it has a faith-based aspect to it.
I know what you mean. Yeah. I think that there's actually a lot of, the visualizations, I dig that too. I agree with you that I didn't necessarily need more of, like, what's out in the woods kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
It would have been cool to have that, but at the same time, like, what else are you going to show me? You know what I mean? Like, I'm kind of familiar with what you're showing me already. Like, the cold opening of this movie has some interesting elements that you're seeing.
Yeah.
And so there, you know what movie you're in for. I think where it kind of, like, slows down a little bit is actually inside the home stuff, where she's trying to really impress upon her children that this home is the only protective barrier that we have against all this evil that is lurking out in the woods. And, you know, like, without it, we are lost. But I completely understand that. I too am glad that he kind of held back. This is, like, to your R rating thing. I'm glad that he kind of held back, because otherwise it would actually lose its strength that it had gained in the allegorical, metaphorical elements if it just became, like, a straight, like, horror movie at the end in the third act.
Very true. And when you only have three main characters, there's only so much you can really do, because you can't just, you know, kill off people.
Yeah, and he employs a few tricks, like, you know, body double type tricks a few times in this movie already. So there's nothing really else that could go crazy, unless you were to go Poltergeist style with it, which is like, oh, everything's going nuts now. You know?
I mean, if you think that, I think of, like, a Cabin in the Woods movie with only one character is two out of three Evil Dead movies. I mean,
sure.
There are ways to manipulate a scenario.
No, totally.
Where you have only one person to work with, and yet it's batshit insane.
Like, yeah, no, I hear you. So because what's that movie where the teacher Felicity Carrie Russell is like going out helping this kid, and the father is like sick. He has to lock up his son. Maybe it's not Carrie Russell. Maybe it's somebody else.
It's like, what Carrie? It's like Cocaine Bear? Like, yeah, what?
But yeah, it's like the one where like the son has to like feed the darkness, and he's got to lock the door, and then one night he leaves it. It's basically like a Wendigo type movie.
That is Carrie Russell. What's it called? Antlers.
Yes, yeah, Antlers. So yes. That's like another interesting movie where it's playing with local folklore mythology in a very remote setting. But it keeps its tension throughout, and that has a child lead. You know what I mean? A co-lead, I guess.
I mean, I didn't like Antlers.
But, I know what you mean. Like, I don't think I loved it.
It has good visuals at times.
Yeah, but it so that third act kind of like goes kind of weird, and I didn't like it. But all that to say is that you can make movies like this where they do take children, put them into situations of peril, situations of whatever, and you can still make a pretty compelling story. I think you're more compelled by it than I am. But still, I think about this. And then from a visual standpoint, there's like this Swedish movie, I think. The one where like a whole bunch of like crazy shit happens, like from manifestations of like these animals in the woods. I forget what it's called, but the guy went on to direct something else and you were like, hey, you should check out his other movie. And I did. And I was like, oh, this is kind of really fucking weird. I'll look it up as you're talking.
Please do, because yeah. I'm like, what Swedish movie?
Yeah, it's anyways.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, I know what you're saying about the house stuff as far as how much Halle Berry is trying to hammer certain things into her children as far as how the evil, you know, to convince them that the evil is out there and whatnot. Sure. I do think that the most juice this movie has is when the film puts us, the audience, in the position of, is this actually happening? Are we believing Halle Berry?
Yeah.
Now, the film makes a choice as far as she can see, and this is a question I had actually. She can see evil, like the evil that's around them. As far as we're concerned, she can see it.
Yes.
Now they have this whole we haven't talked about the rules of this movie at all either. But like let's back up. So the idea, they're in this house. As long as they're in the house, evil can't get to them.
And with rope, yeah.
Sure. I'll get to the rope. I'm just saying. Just to start off, we're in the house. As long as we're in the house, evil can't get to them.
Yeah.
The only way they can leave the house is if they tie ropes around each other, and the ropes are tied to the foundation of the house.
Correct.
So then they can leave however long the rope is.
Right.
If they let go of the rope, it's never let go, then evil has a chance to go after them.
Yes, it will infect them.
It'll bring it back into the house.
Into the house.
It'll make them kill everybody.
Yeah. Yes, correct.
So now, with that established, the kids cannot see evil. They don't see any of the stuff that happens.
Yeah, it's actually a really cool reveal when that happens.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, I...
Yeah, early on, you get a scenario where one of the kids gets out of the rope.
Yeah.
Then the other kid gets out of the rope. Then Halle Berry cuts her own rope so she can get the kids. And I'm sitting there be like, we're just getting rid of the rules right away, huh?
I know.
But as the kids are, like, getting away, Halle Berry has them, and you're seeing evil approaching, and the film kind of reveals that only Halle Berry is the one that sees evil. Now, even when she's at the house and just sitting on her porch, she could see evil on the outside of the house. Evil can't come in the house, but she can see the evil out there looking at her, taunting her, or whatever.
Yeah, taking forms of people that she knows.
Now, my question is, why?
I don't know. And so that's
that's
where,
what kept throwing me.
I know, but, like, it's essentially... Again, it's metaphorically, it's just temptation, right? And so that's the part where I was like, I get what you're doing.
Is it because she's an adult?
No, I think
because why can't the kids? That's been my curiosity.
This is like my take on it, which is so she's an adult. She kind of shows you photos of her past life where she was like a wild child. You know what I mean? Basically, like she'd probably done drugs. She's got a bunch of tattoos. And then she was like, you know, before I had the evil in me. And so now that I'm older and I had you guys in my life.
So she's already known temptation.
Exactly.
Is that your idea?
So she's been seduced by temptation by whatever, the devil or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
And so her wanting to preserve the innocence of her children is what's driving her to be like, y'all gotta like touch this wood, say all these things, and you guys can't see it yet because you guys have never been tempted before. And I'm telling you that the world has disappeared. and you guys are the only ones. So that's why it's like, that's why we can't see it. Like, that's why they don't trust her. But at the same time, like, again, this is very allegorical. I'm like, well, now there's, like, maybe the evil does exist, because I actually really dug the part where perhaps the evil just says something to one of the brothers, like, in passing, and you're like, oh, maybe it is here. You know what I mean? So, yeah, that's the reasoning why.
That makes sense. And again, we're just getting out of the theater, so it's like, I only have so much time to
explore
ideas about, like, what's going on. Exactly. But with that in mind, I do still go back to, yes, I do think the film is very compelling when it's pushing you to be like, wait, is this happening? Is the world really, like, gone to shit? Like, what's actually, what actually is taking place here?
Yeah.
Are the kids right into suspect that she's not telling the truth, or at least that she's not correct in believing this, even if she, and that we're actually fine if we go out into the world by ourselves?
Yeah.
Like, I like all that stuff. I do think, seeing basically a montage of how bad things get, you kind of get it after a while, and it's like, this sucks. I get that. Let's move on. Let's move on to something else. Let's raise that tension back up. Was there another creature somewhere?
Yeah, no, I hear that, because, again, it becomes, at least to me, it becomes less of a creature thing and just more of a great, well, now these brothers are pitted against each other. Again, the Cain and Abel type situation. Mm-hmm. And that is, I think, what he's trying to drive at, which is, this is what could happen. You know, these brothers, like, were tight, and now they're not tight, and this is how things can play out. Because if it did just go full-on monster creature, I would have dug it, you know? Like, I would have been like, oh, shit, she was right the whole time, and you kids fucked up, and you didn't listen to your mom. And this is a story about kids listening to their mom, just like in that one Arrested Development where you should always leave a note.
Yep. Peer pressure, favorite episode.
But yeah, what did you feel like? You were telling me Alexander Aja, and you were talking about how it was sometimes his movies are too mean.
Mm-hmm.
This one doesn't necessarily fall in that category.
It's kind of mean.
yeah, I guess so. Yeah, but I'm curious, like, because he does have an eye to shoot movies.
Sure,
you know what I mean. And I dug some scenes where he's like doing, like, you know, the dolly thing to enlarge, like, this tree trunk. Or whether it's, like, subtle things moving out in the background. And I'm just curious, like, your overall thoughts about his artistic touch on this movie. Minus, like, all of the stuff that we talked about.
As far as his efforts as a director here, what I like is that there's restraint.
Okay.
Which is generally my issue with his movies. Like, his harder core films, like High Tension, like Hills Have Eyes, Mirrors. Those are movies that really go hardcore on the gore and the impact of it and so on and so forth. And it's not that I'm like, I'm certainly not squeamish about these things as I, you know, continue to build my anticipation for Terrifier 3, but it's more the intent behind it. And I just, like, watching those movies, it just felt too nihilistic for me without having anything to really back it up.
Mm-hmm.
So this movie, similar to the ones that I do like from him, such as Crawl.
Yeah.
Like, I like that his emphasis here is, it's not on so much on the impact of whatever violence occurs or whatnot. It's just more comes with the territory. So when there is harm that affects our core characters, we don't need to revel in it.
Yeah.
And so, yes, the movie's not mean in that way. It's just dark, I guess, by comparison.
Yeah.
And in terms of, like, just his style, again, it's not overly stylized, but there's enough effort from his part to be like, yeah, there's a real director working on this. There's someone that has that. Yeah. It doesn't feel like a first film by any means. I wouldn't say it's, you know, the best directed horror film I've seen, but I mean, it does. It has plenty of effort going into it that feels like someone that gets how to do this kind of thing.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think that visual key kind of helps propel the storyline. But it also, even though I wasn't as engaged with, like, these two young children actors, it helps compel me because there's cool shadow work, or there's, like, cool, like, you know, light and dark work. Like, that stuff is very neat. And also, you're able to, I guess to some degree, he's got, he doesn't do, like, a bunch of jump scares, like, on the screen, but when things happen, it's compelling, you know? And so, in the hands of a lesser director, and he only has directed, like what you're saying, like 7-10 movies kind of thing.
That's a good size.
It's a good size, yeah. But I mean, like,
a share of films.
Yeah, totally, yeah. But I mean, like, you know, he's not like a prolific horror director kind of thing where it's like, oh, he's made 56 of them. He's made a lot of good movies, and a lot of movies, I should say. But still, like, in the hands of a lesser director, it would be very, it could be very static and very flat, and that would actually just, I would then be like, this is a bad movie. Like, this is just, there's nothing visually interesting. There's no directorial choices. It's all very bland, and it is what it is. But I can see why somebody like Halle Berry wants to be like, I do want to be part of this project, and I do want to put my name as an executive
producer. Well, that's what compelled me, too, because the idea of, you know, I think this Halle Berry subgenre of thrillers she starred in, I think they're effective. And if she wants to go out and find directors that could, like, because this is one of her productions as well. She's a producer on the film.
Yeah.
If she's going to find out, like, you know, people that can direct these kind of movies with me, that's neat. That's neat that she's like, yeah, let's get Alexandre Aja in here and let's see what he can do with this script. Like, that's, there's enough working in his favor on that level that I can appreciate for sure.
It's The Ritual.
Oh, okay. That
where
movie.
It's like got like
yeah,
pretty crazy visuals about like animals in the woods.
I like the creature design. I'm not huge on the movie. Yeah. What that director do next?
The Night House. Or Night House.
The Night House. Yeah. Okay, yeah.
Which I thought was a really cool movie.
It's and really well acted from Rebecca Hall. Yeah.
I think more people should see that because when the plot twist happens, not to make two movie reviews, but when the plot twist happens, I was like, oh, this is actually pretty neat.
Oh, that's that does the job.
And there's actually an incredible jump scare in that movie that I was like, I don't know what's happening here, but that was really good, and I'm really scared.
Yeah, I can't even remember it exactly. I just remember there being a jump scare. Like,
yes.
I remember what it is. That's like one of the best jump scares of the year.
There's like somebody just walking through
the woods. I remember what it is.
And then it's like, what the fuck is happening here?
That's a good one.
Yeah. So anyway, back to this movie here. Yeah, I appreciate that there's a directorial stamp on this. But I think that you're kind of saying that he doesn't necessarily have like... you're saying that his movies don't all look the same, which is fine.
I can identify his movies by the gore in them.
Sure.
That's generally how I can identify his movies.
And this one kind of had some of that, but, you know, with like some form factor shifting and changing.
Yeah.
But all that to say is that, yes, I think that they're actually... this movie is actually well served by having a director that kind of has some cool visual elements to it. Even though they don't really go a lot of places or do a lot of things, it is better than a very static camera.
Barry's very good in this movie too. I should just point that out. I do think that she knows how to play this kind of role at this point, play into, you know, thriller territory or whatnot. But even then, she's still being pushed to do certain kinds of things. She has to be a really tough mother. She has to have...
And for that reason, it's compelling, because you're just like, why is she being so tough?
Yeah.
You know, is she trying to make her kids tougher, or is it that she is crazy, or, you know, what? And so, yeah.
And again, the film... the fact the film has a push and pull with how deep we're going with her sanity, I do think it makes a difference. So, it's a good performance, I'm saying.
I don't necessarily think the kids are great, but you had no real problem with them.
I don't have any problem with them. Like, I don't think they're necessarily amazing, but I do think that they're effective enough at what they're doing.
Yeah.
One more than the other, I would say.
Which one?
The one with the afro.
Okay.
I think he was the better actor of the two.
Nolan?
Yes.
Yeah.
Nolan, is that his name?
That's the character's name.
Yeah.
Nolan.
Okay.
The other one is Sam.
Sam, yeah. I think they're both, like, interesting type characters as far as the kinds of roles they're supposed to play here, but I do think Nolan had there's more for him to do that I was
they both have a lot of things to do. Yeah,
I like the arc that Nolan has more.
Yeah, I agree.
I would say
without getting into spoilers, what did you think of the ending? Like every part about the ending,
I like, there's some visual choices I really liked about the ending, about things that happened. And then as far as like where we leave things, I was happy with. I know exactly where this is going. I was still like, I still like this kind of an ending for this kind of movie.
Okay. You're talking about like something.
The very final things that happened.
Yeah.
Actually, there is a thing of a photo that I actually really liked as well. I thought that was actually pretty
neat. The photo?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I thought it lost some momentum at a certain point. And then there's like another child actor that kind of pops up, and I was like, okay, it's also not a good performance, so it's kind of taking me out. But I dug what was happening. And then
you're saying the ending. I mean, this is like that's like saying the third act.
That's
of this
true.
Movie.
Yeah, yeah. But the ending itself, I thought that it was compelling enough because it actually keeps the momentum of the metaphorical, allegorical things going. Right.
There's a certain ritual that they practice throughout the movie that comes into play at the ending, and I really liked that.
Yeah,
I like that there is a resolution to why that aspect of the film was there.
Yeah, I agree. And again, if I wanted to be very, again, allegorical about this, basically his faith comes into play.
Sure.
He is tested. His faith is tested. He goes back to it because he has lost it kind of throughout the movie. And then it proves itself that it does work. And love and, you know, if you put all the bad things and then think about, like, the outcome, then you can kind of center yourself, right? So, totally fine. But as far as, like, the photos and stuff goes, I was like, LOL. It's like, lol. Okay. So, all right.
Anything else? I'll never let go.
The score was by Rob.
Sure was.
Yeah. It had some interesting things in the score, but I think it's, you don't really hear it much, but I was compelled at one point by it. In the when he's walking through the forest or something, so it's pretty interesting. So,
yeah, it's, you know, decent score. It does the job.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Never Let Go is currently in theaters.
Yes.
When do people go and see this movie?
I honestly think that this is like a premium cable thing. So on our rating scale, how about you?
Sicily's Lionsgate, so that means it'll go to like Netflix eventually, I suppose. Okay.
Also, when did Lionsgate choose like a red logo?
They've had that. That's their old logo. That's their old logo. Okay. That's when Saw movies are coming out.
Yeah. I was like, is that their horror logo?
It is.
Okay.
They have the regular logo, and they have the ones that they use specifically for genre movies.
Yeah,
and
got it.
Okay. No, I like when that logo pops up, because like, I beat you in for something scary. Jigsaw's here and he wants to play a game with you. No, I would say this is like when it comes on one of the streaming services, it's fine. Okay. Like I think the movie's enjoyable. I wouldn't necessarily say you like need to like race out to theaters to see it, but I still think it's worth watching in, you know, a quality streaming version.
Sure. Okay.
So yeah.
We're kind of on the same page.
All right. Well, Never Let Go in theaters now. Presuming we have a special something next, let's cut to that right now.
For thousands of years, we have been at war. But before, we were enemies. We were like brothers.
You ready?
Always ready. Let's punch in.
Hey, watch where you're going!
What did you say?
It's not like he can transform.
Hey, Darkwing!
Don't.
My finger can transform. Guess which one?
Allow me.
I appreciate you having my back.
No matter what.
All right. Here we are. We're taking a break from our Never Let Go side of the review portion to go to our other thing here that we didn't... Amon, I did not know if this was going to happen. So this is going to seamlessly edit into the show now. Because I'm here now with the Noir Artur's Terrence Johnson to discuss Transformers 1. Terrence, how are you doing?
You know, I'm doing fine. It's not like we haven't, you know, just had a long conversation about something else.
Future show.
Yes. this is a show. We're beaming this from the future.
Yes.
To the past.
To the past.
But then back to the future for whatever anybody listens to this.
During my NorCal excursion where you also not currently living in NorCal are also up here. So we've made this work.
Yes, we have.
Okay. Before you get into this movie, do you care about Transformers? Is this a thing for you?
So
In any capacity? Yeah.
Have extremely fond memories of seeing the first Transformers movie in the movie theater. Like, let me go. I saw it at Atlantic Station in Atlanta with my friends from college. I remember where we were sitting in the theater. I remember seeing the Cloverfield trailer.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Before that screening, I remember cheering for all of the, you know, Bayhem. And I think that it had sort of like a really strong start. And then I saw the second one and I said, oh. And then I saw the third one, and I said,
yeah, it's better.
And then I saw the fourth one with Joseph Braverman, and I have it's one of the few movies I've contemplated walking out of. But I saw it in IMAX, and I was like, I just paid $22.50 to see this.
And they saved the damn Dinobots till the end. So he's like, I gotta wait till this.
I was like, and that broke the interest, right? So I haven't really cared for them. I didn't watch them really growing up. I wasn't uber interested in seeing this one, but I got it invited to the screening, and I was like, okay, let me, you know, go see it. I think that it's good.
Okay.
You know, so like it's a 3-star film to me. I think that there are some elements, I think visually, like obviously Michael, I do believe the first Transformers movie should have won that visual effects Oscar over the Golden Compass. That is one of the dumbest decisions the Academy has ever made.
I've had a theory that the reason Michael Bay has done 5 Transformers movies
to try and win it.
Is because he kept wanting to win that visual effects Oscar.
And they never did.
And they never gave it to him.
Yes.
Because they finally gave up.
Because the visual effects got worse as the, you know, visually, the films got worse.
They didn't necessarily get worse, but I feel like the weight that's in the first one is never replicated in the other ones.
Yeah.
There's an effort to make it seem like these robots are actually on Earth in the first movie the way they just step on the ground that is lost in the rest of them.
Yeah, and so in this animated film, like, as I was watching this, I was like, oh, this is obviously the medium it should stick with. Uh-huh. Just, like, visually, they can do more. There are some shots...
You say that, but it's not like there's a lot of, like, we couldn't do this that
yes,
I've seen in the
but
Bay
I just meant, like, the Kree... Obviously, we're on their home planet. Mm-hmm. So we're like in outer, the space element to it, but just like I felt like the creative, it got like, the franchise got like a creative jolt.
I agree with that.
Yeah. So like
if there's a problem with the movies from a visual effects standpoint, the live action movies, it's that they're very fucking busy.
Yes.
Like they're so overly animated when it comes to their transformations alone. Like, you know, that first movie, Optimus Prime, when he goes from like a truck to being Optimus Prime the first time, it's like, why is this 45 seconds? Like, this takes so long for him just to be a robot.
And so, yeah, in that way, I think this movie gets to improve upon the franchise and sort of take it in a new direction. Like, there are a couple... One of my issues also with the movie is regarding... I wish the directors would have trusted themselves a little bit more to hold on some of the shots. Because I do think, like, there's... Particularly when, like, an alien ship is landing. And just the scale... I was like, oh, this is like brilliant of filmmakers understanding the medium with which they're working and like the scale and how that, you know, this alien ship is like gigantic compared to even the Transformers. And so it was like, that was such a cool shot, but we don't hold on it for long. And I was like, God, I wish you would just do that. But I think that overall the story is fine. I did have some issues with one character's arc, I think, is sped up a little too quick. But I think that the voice work is very... I'm intrigued by the idea of them just calling up Kevin Feige and saying, who has an off day? Can they come down to the studio and record their part? Because it's Avengers City, an Eternal City, you know. Brian Tyree Henry, Christopher Hemsworth, Scarlett Johansson, Fishburne was in a Marvel movie.
He was, yes.
So it's like, it's the, they definitely, Kikubako, he is the only one who is.
He's John Hamm. He's been in a Marvel movie.
Yeah, he's like the only one who's in that main sort of group that's, you know, not in Marvel, but. I thought it was good. I think a lot of kids will like it. I think a lot of parents will like it. But I think my main issue, I think Hemsworth does a decent job. However,
yeah.
It's just tough when what, like, I can tell he's doing a performance.
Yes.
In that he's trying to obviously cut out his accent as much as possible and sort of build this character into something that will grow to sound like
Optimus Prime.
But it's still tough because it's like, you know, for as much as I think the Transformers franchise is raggedy, that vocal performance is incredible.
Yeah, but it also speaks to, now this is going to be a whole stupid conversation about this, it does speak to the film's choice to be like, Transformers can be young, and they can age yeah. into something. So I'm sitting here on the side like, so they're younger? I mean, they're robots. How does this work? They,
yeah.
they age? Like what does, that doesn't make sense to me. Same way as the Cars universe doesn't make sense to me. But I have to ask all these questions anyway yes. about it. I do get the idea of, if you're going to make an animated film geared towards children about young Optimus Prime and Megatron, who were once friends.
Yes.
It would be weird to be like, hey, it's me, Brian Tyree Henry, and I'm Optimus Prime. It's like, why are these guys friends? Like, this is yeah. such a weird, like, I get where that logic comes from. And that did leave me, I get it, but it also is the reason why I was skeptical to begin with when they're like, well, we're making an animated Transformers film and it stars Chris Hemsworth. I'm like, that just seems desperate. To get to my thoughts on the movie, and I'll just, before I get that, I'll say this. Watch Bumblebee and Rise of the Beast. I think those are worthwhile. I think those are how things go. Bumblebee especially. I don't have to make an argument for. Bumblebee's just good.
Uh-huh.
Rise of the Beast, it's got Ramos and Fishback. I think they're having fun. I think the robot stuff is good enough without having to, you know, be over the top like yeah. the movies are. Regardless, you know, it's not hard to put on the old Paramount Plus.
Yes, because Paramount Plus is now included in my and also, subscription. So
they're also both, I think, under 2 hours, or at most,
blessing.
At most, under 2 hours without credits.
Yes, that. Because we that was another reason why the Transformers movies fell off for me.
So this movie, I was not excited because I think the trailer was garbage. I was watching this as like,
oof.
I get that it's for a younger audience. Mm-hmm. That doesn't offend me. But even then, it's not like there's, you know, it's not like there's not good kids films.
Yes.
So watching the trailer, I was like, this just looks exactly what I expect when I saw Chris Hemsworth leads cast of young Transformers movies. Like,
uh-huh.
this was like, we just needed to do something or else we lose a license or whatever the fuck. Having heard the buzz that it's better than the trailer was, I'm like, okay, cool. That's, at least I'm not uh-huh. dreading seeing this movie. Watching the movie, the other thing that I was also made clear on was, once you get past like the first 20-ish minutes, yes. then it kind of kicks into gear.
Uh-huh.
And that's where it fell for me. I don't think it's great, but I do think it's good.
Yeah, it's good.
I have certain issues, slightly different for yours. One is, as much as I like the visual ambition on display, because uh-huh. there is a lot of like, hey, it's animated, so we can do a lot of cool action-related yeah. stuff. I'm not big on the designs of the characters. I do think they're, like, I know, and it's like ILMs. It's like, they got the money. They did the work.
Yeah.
But it felt, I don't know, it felt a little too, I don't want to say blocky, but like, I wasn't huge on how they designed the specific version of Transformers.
Yes.
Do I have a giant, deep connection to Transformers in general? Not really. Like, yeah. I played with some toys, I watched some cartoons, but I wouldn't say, like, I need them to look a certain way. It's just more, when I look at these ones, I'm like, they didn't get me too excited mm-hmm. while looking at this specific, like, art form when it came to Transformers. Regardless of that, I agree that Chris Hemsworth is fine. I don't think he falls in the category. If it's not him, it's just more of A-list stars automatically get to be like voice actors. Like, get voice actors to do voice acting.
Yes.
Like, it's the same with Johansson.
I really felt it with her, even though I don't think she's bad.
She's bad. It just feels more like we're casting her because her name's Scarlett Johansson.
Yeah, and her voice is so distinct.
Like, at least Keegan's gonna give a performance generally. Like, yes. he brings a lot of energy to stuff, so like, that's fine. Tyree Henry, though, he's giving it. He's bringing the. He's doing the what he needs to do.
He is.
I don't not expect that because he's Brian Tyree Henry.
Of course.
And I'm not going to say it's the best voice performance of all time, but I do think because Megatron is a more interesting character, that gives him more opportunity to play different kinds yeah. of shades of what he's going for.
I agree. I suppose that Keegan gives the best vocal performance in the film. With Brian, I would put a very close second. And, like, Hemsworth and Johansson, it's like, they're fine, and in once you do get into the movie, you sort of forget. Obviously, Chris Hemsworth is going to be just present in your mind. Like, we've seen Chris Hemsworth in a lot of stuff. We know who he is. We know what he sounds like. Right? So, it never moved into, like, characterization for me versus just voice.
Because he's not a voice actor. That's what it comes down to. He knows.
Even Brian, to that point, even though I think he did a really good job, I don't think it sort of settled in that way.
I would agree because, again, he's also not a voice actor. But I do think just by nature of what the character is, there's more for him to play with.
Yes. Where
Chris Evans was just straight arrow. Like, there's not much evolution there beyond, now I can transform.
Yeah, I think the toughest part for me for this movie, I just think it just rushed. It sort of sped up. They want to get to Decepticons, Autobots fighting each other. And so they were like, by the end of this movie, we need to set up that. And I almost would have wanted the movie to be like 10 minutes longer.
Perhaps.
But in a way, like,
I was sitting there thinking, I need more of this. I feel like it hit
the beats, but I'm just like, the nuances of Brian Tyree Henry's character moving to Megatron. I'm like, the mechanics of how we get there are all present.
Yes.
But I think some of the nuances, it just like, we flew to that point with that character.
I feel like there's an inherent snobbery in me that's why I'm not caring about this because that's the best way I can phrase it. Because when I look,
who gives a fuck about Transformers is what you're really trying to say.
It basically is. It's like, I don't have a level in me that's like, I wish it did A, B, and C so it could be that supreme 4.5 star I don't know, I think maybe 5. I'm saying this.
I'm not giving it the damn five.
My mind isn't even computing the idea of it reaching that kind of level.
To me, it's not even that. It just is like, you're sort of watching it. You get to this point and like, I buy the righteous anger against the villain.
Sure.
I buy how he would feel about disposing of the villain. I buy that he's going to be opposed to his friend. I just don't buy how fast that happened.
Yeah, I mean that.
So in that respect, it like, I think, like I said, I think the movie is in particular with the like other gigantic threat that's within their universe, that like the movie just does away with. I think maybe that's why I feel a little bit, because it's like we got a big bad sitting outside, but like we need to get to Autobots v Decepticons by the end of this.
I know what you're saying, and it's not even like I disagree with what you're saying. It's just more again, like, there's only so much I can put into.
But in this Transformers is 2,
yeah, yes,
TWO, right?
Exclamation point!
Like, if this movie ends with them defeating the villain, and both of our characters having the sparks of these people, these robots, and in the process of fighting the big bad, we continually break up that relationship and end it where it's like, nah, we gotta, it's like,
I do think the risk that they're already taking is saying these two characters who, at the bare minimum of what you know about Transformers is Optimus Prime, Hero, Megatron, Nemesis.
Yes.
I think the risk it's already taken is saying, but what if there were friends at one point in time? And you have to deal with a whole movie where that's the case until they're not anymore. I think an audience of a certain, like, I don't even know what the intention is. Like, are we going for a young audience or are we going for people that are nostalgic for Transformers? But the whole gist of this is, You have to already know that that's not going to last. And how far can you go before actually breaking that up?
Yeah.
Is there a way to do that better? Of course.
That's what I think.
In a vacuum where they have unlimited time and can do everything they want to, make the perfect script.
Yeah, it's not even, it just is like, there's something about the story we were being told that is relying on a lot of tropes and things that we already have an understanding of to shortcut us.
Sure.
But like, but also in the storytelling and the tropes, like you also need the bridges too, right? We've had a lot of stories about friends who become enemies.
Yes.
But like, you still need the full understanding of it makes
you're not wrong.
Like, yeah, I think so. That's where I think the movie,
I think a better version of this is like Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, where you have Caesar and you have Koba, right? And I do think that movie, I mean, that movie's over 2 hours. It spends a lot of time giving you all the necessities you need as to why Koba hates humans and would go against Caesar because of that fact.
Yeah.
Like, you get a lot of that. Even X-Men First Class, I think, does the work to show you why Magneto does not, you know, he and Charles just can't be friends. Those are movies that do get the assignment, even though they have to contend with one way, and we know we're going to get
Let's analyze X-Men First Class in respect, because I think that's a good, interesting...
Uh-huh.
They, obviously, Charles and Eric, you know, their love affair... in that we get an instance of like what ultimately breaks the friendship up at the end of that movie.
How they go about killing what Kevin Bacon.
Yeah. Right. That's part one of it. There's the, you know, he gets shot. And he tries to deflect the bullet, and
it hits Charles.
Yes. Yeah. And in this movie, it's very interesting because we do have a situation where the two characters want.
I get, and there's the whole Bay of Pigs thing happening where the missiles is trying. It's been a minute since I watched it first. Yeah, class. But I'm, like, I'm remembering all these things as I go.
But it's like you've got the internal conflict.
Yes.
You've got the regular villain, and then you've got the outsized force, right? And in this movie, the climax really starts pairing. It pairs off the external force, which is these other aliens who want their resources.
Yeah.
And we get into, it's really, we're going to focus on the one big bad, right? And both of them have sort of different approaches. Like, don't kill him, do X. I want to kill him because I'm so pissed off about how shady and awful he did us.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But in the mechanics of the movie, you've understood that, like, they can get their sparks.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so, in this moment, it's like, you obviously, I get the character, whatever the fuck is, the robot's name is before, is Megatron, for lack of a better word.
I can't beat these other names that they have.
I couldn't tell you.
And his is like a letter and a number or something, too.
Like it's not B16.
No, that's the thing.
Scandal. But, like, he does the action to kill the guy. Great. I love the seriousness of that.
Mm-hmm.
It's when Optimus gets shot, and then he's like, oh, I'm just going to drop you down the well, too. Like, that, I was like, okay, we're now, that's what I meant, but, like, we've moved so quickly into the villain arc that we're missing some of the nuances, right? Like, them getting the helmet off of Kevin Bacon's character, Charles Xavier freezing him, and Eric literally pushing this coin through this dude's head while Charles is, like, mentally linked with him, holding on. Like, the visceralness of that and that decision is, like, so much... There's just texture to it. And I felt like here at the end of this movie, they were kind of just like, okay, well, you know why you're here. We let's just get to it.
I
think it's missing a little bit of that texture.
I would agree. To speak to that, it's not that it's impossible for animated films to create a sort of an emotional reckoning for characters. That's all of Pixar. But I do feel like compared to an X-Men movie that's rated PG-13,
uh-huh,
there's limits you can push in that realm that you can't, that I don't expect. Not only that I don't expect from a Transformers movie, but that I don't feel at the end of the day the prem audience is going to like really want to be in on in that same
way.
I do credit this movie for doing, I think, more with the plot for a Transformers movie than most Transformers movies.
Yes.
Beyond just like whatever subtext you want to think that's going on in the Bay movies, there's legit attempts to do something with the ideas of friendship and making it into the Shakespearean drama.
I mean, the first movie is a boy in his car.
Yes, the first movie is E.T. You know, with Michael Bay. And you can read into the second and third movie in regards to war in Iraq and other ideas that are present in the background of those, and consumerism and the fourth one for some reason, and whatever the fuck the fifth movie's about. And even like the animated movie from 86, which is great, and has a great soundtrack, that has some deep thing going on because it literally kills off several main characters that you, if you don't know this story, if you don't know this movie, you're like, oh wow, it's really trying. But thematically, it's not really doing much. It's just saying like, we're gonna start off on a high of darkness and then go from there. This movie's like, no, we're gonna try to take some twists and turns with things that you don't generally see on an emotional level. Could it do it better? Sure.
Yeah.
Have other animated movies similar done something and then made it better because they're just better at doing this thing? Sure. This movie's directed by Josh Cooley. He made Toy Story 4. He's worked in Pixar. He's been a Pixar guy. He's not, like, I'm not going to say this feels like a runoff of Pixar, but it does feel like there's a director that has more of an idea of what they want to do with this compared to other kind of, you know, IP-based properties turned into animated movies, because why not? This does feel like, it feels like someone tried to do something here.
Yeah, and in that, like, I do agree with you. I think for me, whether I'm the prime audience or not, I saw the movie. So, I think
it's fair. Like, I'm sitting here, like, it's not like my grade's many much higher than yours.
I think it's good. I was like, we got to the end. I was like, damn, we sped through, like, what would be, you know, a half hour of screen time in about 10, 15 minutes.
Which is a fair statement to make.
Story beats, it's like, you know, they wanted to get to Autobots versus Decepticons, and they were like, let's do that in the sort of most trim way possible, but you know, you can eat lean meat, but like the fat is what gives you the flavor, right? So it's sort of that.
Here's my question now to you. Mm-hmm. You've seen this movie, you like this movie. Would you entertain more like sequels to this specific iteration of Transformers?
Sure.
I ask this because I just legit don't know where it would go beyond just being like, and now
they're going to do the war on the planet, right?
I guess, yeah.
You know, and then maybe in the next movie, the war will have to stop a little bit because, like I said, giant alien, their greatest enemy of all time is chilling on the surface of the planet. Mm-hmm. Like, at some point, we got to fight that. So that's what I mean by like in the movie, like that the specter of that sort of being brushed away. Yeah, I just homie dropping, shooting Optimus Prime, and then being like, damn. Well, and then just dropping him. I was like, damn, that's like, even for a character that's that far gone. Mm-hmm. Like, that felt like, that's what I mean by like sped through it. It's like we needed more moments of, you know, we needed more moments.
Well, as far as earning emotional catharsis in regards to robotic characters, I know the Wild Robot comes out next week, and I haven't seen it yet, but I'm sure that's going to deliver on that in some capacity.
That's the only thing
people keep talking about with that film. So I look forward to seeing that one. But I did enjoy this movie. You enjoyed this movie as well. Transformers 1's currently playing in theaters. Mm-hmm. When do people go and see Transformers 1?
If you've got kids, go to the theater. This is not, you're not going to be like, oh God, why am I at this children's movie?
You might start feeling that way at first, but
yeah. And then for everybody else, you know, whenever you feel like, whenever the spirit moves you.
Yeah. I think this is a solid matinee dollar theater kind of movie. I think as much as I'm not huge on the design of it all, I do think it, you know, it looks the part as mm-hmm. far as giving you, you know, Transformers action in a big screen capacity. It has that going for it. It sounds great. It looks nice. Music and what have you. Voice acting is negligible, but I do think it does mostly does the job that's required. So yeah, no, I think what could have been a disaster that is Transformers 1 turned out to be, it does the job.
So, it does. It does do the job.
Great. Well, thank you, Terrence. Where can people find more of you online?
You can find me at lenoirtour.net and on Terrence at, on Terrence, my God, on Twitter at Terrence B. Johnson.
All right. And now back to Abe and I talking about other things. Okay. All right. Now, Abe.
Thank you for that.
Yeah. Assuming that happened. Yeah. Thanks for that. Now, okay.
Should I say the name?
What? No.
Oh. Okay.
We'll just assume it all went to plan and it edits perfectly.
Thank you. Denver Broncos.
So, there's only two of us here.
Yes.
But that doesn't mean I don't have time for this. So, Abe, what time is it right now?
I think I'm time for a quick game here.
It is time for games.
Well, no, in fact, did you know that's actually the sound that plays when the rope comes off your chest?
Exactly. Exactly what happens. Abe, I have a game for you.
Yes.
It's called Who Did I See?
Why did you shout it?
I want to make sure you're listening.
Okay.
So, I was at a screening the other week.
Okay.
And I saw somebody notable, and so I want you to guess who I saw.
Okay.
So I want you to play 20 questions with me.
Wow.
Just give me, I want you, you can just ask me yes or no questions and try to narrow it down.
I mean, okay, got it. Is this person in the movie that you saw?
No.
Is this person like an A-list person?
Yes.
Is this person tall? Like over 6 feet tall?
No.
Is this person male?
Yes.
How many questions is that?
I don't care.
It's at least like five.
We're not playing to 20. Just do it until you get it.
Does this person have dark hair?
Yes.
Does this person have facial hair?
Yes.
If I guess, do I lose or I just have a little bit of guesses?
I would say you want to narrow it down a lot before you start guessing.
Is this person also a musician?
No.
Okay. Has this person been in a movie that I have seen this year?
This year?
Yes.
I'm going to say no.
Oh, wow. Okay. Is this person older than 45?
Yes.
Is somebody that's not very tall, over 45, dark hair with facial hair?
You might want to clarify facial hair.
Does this person have a beard?
No.
Does this person have a mustache?
No.
This person just has a 5 o'clock shadow?
More or less.
Okay, because when I'm talking about facial, it's like full on beard.
They're not defined by the fact that they have facial hair.
Yeah, but like I'm thinking about people that would have facial hair right now. Was this person clean shaven, I should say?
Not at this stage.
Got it. And not a musician. So that's not Jack Black.
Jack Black has a full fucking beard.
I know, that's what I'm saying.
I wouldn't ask you to clarify. I'd just be saying yes.
I'm kind of like giving you some answers in my head right now. Like, first of all, I was like, maybe he's like Jason Schwartzman, which is why I asked if he was a musician. Is this person part of a famous family?
No.
Okay. Is this person married to somebody famous as well?
No.
Interesting. Has this person directed anything?
No.
Okay, so just a straight actor. Has this person been in more than 20 films?
Yes.
Whoa. Okay, so somebody who's older than 45 that has facial hair. No, I'm sorry. That is not clean shaven. Dark hair. Over 20 movies? Al Pacino?
How did you get to Al Pacino?
He's old, dark hair, under 6 feet tall.
Like, that's actually the answer.
Is it Al Pacino?
Yes, it is.
This is, here, I'll show you, as your guess, this is what, you've seen Al Pacino recently, right? Like, I'm just, Hold up. Keep going. Yeah,
I mean, the fact that you got there from that is impressive to me. I thought you were going to start narrowing it down a lot more before you start guessing a name. That's such a specific guess, but it's correct.
Holy shit. Where did you see him?
So I was at a screening room outside the screening room. Now, the screening room I was at, it's like also a medical center.
Okay.
It's like an office building. There's a medical center mainly, but there's also like a room for screenings in it.
Okay.
I was just sitting outside of it. I was by myself. And somebody, I was like on my phone, somebody walks through the door, all black, dressed all black.
Like this?
Basically. Uh-huh. Dressed all black.
This is what I'm talking about. It's like, oh, fucking weird scraggly hair and shit.
That's why I said clarified yeah. facial hair.
Okay.
Someone kind of, he kind of walks in, dressed all in black. He's got his earbuds in.
Okay.
He kind of looks around the corner. Then he kind of walks back out. As this is happening, I sort of start picking up, and I look over. He's kind of bent over, short, and I'm like...
Yeah, Al Pacino's like 5'6", but he's probably 5'4" now.
And as I realize it, as this is happening, I'm like, oh, that's Al Pacino.
Wow.
And then he left. He got back into, like, the car his driver was in, and he went around the corner. Yeah. I don't know if he went to, like, go park.
You didn't say hey to him.
I don't know if he went to go park and, like, come back in later on. He wasn't at the screening I was at.
Okay.
So maybe he was checking out to see like where he needed to go later on.
Yeah.
I don't know what happened. But all I know is, oh, that was Al Pacino. And so it's like, I was in Beverly Hills. So I'm like, well, that makes sense. Like, that's the area that he would be in. So yeah, I was like Al Pacino the other day.
Wow. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's a bit exciting.
Yeah. He's like one of the most famous actors ever.
You know, it's not like, yeah. it's not, I don't
it's
know.
It's not Jack Black. And it's not Jason Schwartzman.
It's not some like right, you know.
I guess yeah, he's not part of the famous family. Yeah, no, you're right.
It's
yeah.
not. It's not like Ty Burrell eating a burrito somewhere. Like it's yeah. It's first like of all, Al Pacino.
Ty Burrell would not mind if you said hello to him.
I've seen
quickly,
I've seen Ty Burrell before.
If he's eating a burrito,
I've seen he drives a small Volkswagen.
Oh, for such a tall man.
Yes, it is. Yeah. It is kind of like I wonder if he's doing that on purpose.
Yeah. He's pulling a Nelson Muntz thing. Like, this is the only car that I can afford. Is this funny to you?
Yes. Well, good job. Way to guess that.
Well, thank you for that game.
For sure.
We should employ the 20 questions thing.
That is fun.
As a game.
I just need to see more people.
Well, no. I mean, we could just employ it with, like, an IMDb thing, too. We'll figure
That's
it out.
That's one way to go, yeah, I guess. We'll but it's more fun I've seen somebody, though. That's or true. If you randomly run across somebody in Berkeley.
The only person that I've seen in Berkeley, I've only seen two famous people in Berkeley. Famous, you know... quote unquote, meaning like you know,
the owner of Domino's or something.
Yeah, John Domino.
John Bon Domino.
He's from the other part of New Jersey. Delroy Lindo.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's not bad at all. That's great.
He was
great.
Eating at a restaurant, and I was like, isn't that fucking Delroy Lindo? And again, Berkeley is pretty chill, and so nobody was really bothering him.
Hey,
but probably
brother.
Not a lot of people like knew who he was. This is obviously like pre the
Da Five Bloods.
This is like at least like 10 years ago at this point. And then the only other person was Eric Roberts.
I've met Eric Roberts.
Yes. I was working at a movie theater in college, and I had the morning shift.
Uh-huh.
He literally came in with his wife at like 8 in the morning and saw the first showing of like a movie.
Mrs. Roberts?
Yeah. They were the only ones in the theater.
Uh-huh.
And I said to him as he was leaving, I was like, I love Best of the Best.
And, yeah, Best of the Best.
And he just like,
I'm sure
he said,
gave
all right.
He can be very yeah. positive when it comes
but,
to
know,
like people.
Yeah, you know how he says all right, because yeah. he's got like that mouth thing. He's like, all right.
So, yes.
Yeah. So, yeah, there you go.
Very
well,
good.
Thank you for that game.
Good.
That was great.
That was yeah. fun. All right. Well, let's do a little bit out now feedback.
Feedback.
We didn't have too many questions here because I was going to be up here. So I did ask just, give us questions.
Yeah.
That was the thing I asked.
We got one.
We got one question here. It's from Chris Cleland. He writes, oh boy. Most important question, who's looking after Mr./Mrs. Spider, or is she going on a road trip as well?
That's a great question.
Yeah. For one thing, it's a mister. It is a yes. he. I don't think you can.
I mean, it's not even a mister. It's a doctor, isn't it?
Well, I'll get there in a second. But just to clarify, I don't think they even sell female tarantulas because they don't want them like laying a ton of eggs and stuff like that. Like they like. So yes,
you've now scared me. But keep going.
They don't want them crawling into Abe's pillow when he's sleeping, Jesus. Laying a bunch of eggs in his mouth and his nostrils
Let's
and his ears.
Not do this.
They don't want it like and then they hatch and you're like, oh my god, they're all over the place. Like where'd they come from? They came from inside me.
Yeah, I'm gonna go throw up.
So no, Professor Dent is currently at home.
Yeah,
I got him some crickets before I left.
You know who else got crickets for his tarantula before they left? Buzz from Home Alone.
Did damn straight. Yeah. Yeah. So yeah,
he gave him a whole bunch of mice kits.
Professor Dent largely takes care of himself, so he'll be fine for the few days.
He's an adult. He lives in his own apartment.
He does. Yes. Yeah. He has a job.
Yeah, exactly. He's obviously a professor.
All right.
Good question.
So that's a good question. Thank you for that question, Chris. Yeah, that's enough feedback.
Feedback.
And I think that's going to do it for this fun episode about Now, There, and an Abe. In person.
Yes, yeah.
You can find everything I do at my personal Substack page, thecodeiseek.substack.com. I am the editor-in-chief at Weave Entertainment, so you can find my movie reviews over there. I write Blu-ray and Criterion reviews over at wisesofblue.com, and I'm on all the socials at Aaron's PS4. Abe?
You can find more fun stuff over my Instagram, abe.mula, and twitter.com/walrusmoose. Hashtag, don't let go of the rope!
You can find all the other episodes about Now, There, and Abe on iTunes, Audible, Spotify, and Stitcher.
SoundCloud, Podomatic, and HHWOD.
Feel free to email us at notpodcast@gmail.com.
Check out our Facebook.com/notpodcast, or Twitter.com/podcast.
And Instagram.com/podcast as well. Thanks to any special guests that may have joined us this week.
Thank you to the special guests, or editing point. Thank you.
Let's see. What's happening next week? It's the 27th. Oh, of course. There's two things. There's one is Francis Ford Coppola's Megalopolis.
Uh-huh. I've heard nothing but mixed reviews for that.
And there's also The Wild Robot.
Yes!
Opens as well.
I also should say that I am on vacation for the next 2 weeks, so Aaron is running the ship solo. And if you want to know more about my thoughts about Speak No Evil in fuller detail, drop us a comment. I'm happy to re-record it with Aaron.
Just to be a large glob of words he writes in response. Yeah. But yeah, have a fun and safe vacation.
Thank you.
I do desperately want to hear what you think about Megalopolis when you ever get a chance to see it. but that's going to do it for this special episode. So until next time, so long.
And goodbye.